The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to the program. This is Mike Consol. We have a repeat guest today because we are on the topic of regulation. When you talk about financial regulation, we don't often talk about family offices, but this has suddenly exploded into the news. The whole family office environment is said to weigh in at about $6 trillion worldwide. And family offices, and I'll ask my guest, Amy Lynch, to check me on this, but have pretty much been left to their own devices. They are notoriously private about their activities. And you've heard on this podcast a time or two from family office people that they say, if you've met one family office, you've met one family office. They're all that different, that they're just very different. And the idea of regulating all of these family offices has really been taken as an affront to the people who are administering these family offices and deciding on how to invest their money. We'll talk to Amy Lynch about how this came into the news, but let me first of all let you know that Amy is a repeat guest. She's been on once before talking about regulatory matters. Her regulatory experience includes stints as an examiner and an investigator with the Securities and Exchange Commission and FINRA before she founded Frontline Compliance, which she is founder and president of. And this story came to my attention because, or this podcast, the subject matter came to my attention after receiving an email from Frontline Compliance. Amy regularly puts out updates on what's happening in the regulatory environment. Amy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Mike, for having me back. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you. You're very well schooled in this stuff. So let me have you tell the story here a little bit about the turn of events that has thrown family offices under the regulatory microscope. Can you give us the background on this?
Sure. So Archegos Capital Management, which is a family office and is run by Mr. Huang, who is a very well-known industry player, or in the recent past was an industry player, in that he was part of Tiger Asia Management, and that was a fund that imploded many years ago, and he was indicted on insider trading charges. It was quite a large fiasco for the industry at the time, and really put a light on the dangers of over-hedging and stock manipulation and insider trading in the hedge fund world. But he was barred from the industry and went and opened up his own family office to manage his own money and the money of his family members, and that was Archegos. So what happened just a few months ago was that he was putting on positions at several different prime brokerages for his fund in the manner of total return swaps, which allowed him to take extremely large positions in specific issuers without actually owning the underlying security. So the actual risk of ownership of the security was on the prime brokers. And the various prime brokers like Credit Suisse, Morgan Stanley, Nomura, they didn't know that the other players were involved. So Credit Suisse didn't know that Nomura was taking a position. Nomura didn't know that Morgan Stanley was taking a position. All in these same securities, and very large volumes of transactions were occurring. And even the commentators on the other media networks were talking about this extreme volatility in certain issuers, and they couldn't really explain it until a few weeks later when this whole transaction with Archegos blew up.
So you're talking about Bill Huang, I believe the last name's pronounced, 57-year-old veteran investor. He's gotten in trouble before. Let's say regulators had been involved with family offices. Would this not have happened? I mean, would their asserting themselves in the family office firmament have actually headed this thing off at the pass? And would they have said to Mr. Huang, you're persona non grata. You're not allowed to be doing what you're doing. Get out.
Right. Well, in this case, if they had been under regulatory scrutiny, and I mean family offices, he could not have done what he was doing because he had been barred from the industry. So he could not be a professional market player due to the SEC bar imposed upon him. So we're talking about a totally different scenario with this particular individual. And this could just be a one-off. You know, he's a known bad actor. It is quite possible that this was a one-time fluke that happened. And unfortunately, there were some very large banks that ended up on the wrong side of the trade. And maybe this would not occur under any other circumstances. And I think that's what the SEC really needs to determine. They need to go in and start looking at some of these family offices. And I think that's the downside of all of this, is that the SEC now needs to go in and look at these firms, and there will be scrutiny. So other family offices that are, you know, just managing their own money, minding their own business, doing, not so complex transactions like Archegos, are going to end up getting looked at by the SEC. That is, if they can be discovered at all by the SEC. And they can get that information, though, through the various industry trade groups, which I'm sure they are actively doing. And they'll go in and start doing examinations and find out, okay, what kind of transaction activity is occurring at these firms? And do they impose any kind of a systemic market risk? Because what happened at Archegos, if it were to happen in any kind of scale, would most definitely become systemic market risk.
Well, in Archegos, it was a $13 billion investment firm, according to what I'm looking at here. So, $13 billion is not chump change, but there are far bigger organizations than that as well. So family offices have done extremely well. They've been, as I said at the top, kind of left to their own devices, Amy. And they have benefited greatly from being, unregulated, so to speak. Obviously, they work within a regulatory environment, within various asset classes and all that. But can regulators actually assert themselves in a meaningful way within family offices that isn't going to impinge their creativity? And when I say creativity, the reason I bring that up is I remember the head of one of a major investment house had told me, you know where I get most of my ideas? It's from family offices. They've got a lot of creative ideas, and I talk to them, and I borrow those ideas and implement them. So they have been a kind of this engine of creativity. Regulators tend to not want you to get too fancy, right? They tend to not want you to freelance too much. So could regulators, again, getting back to the core of the question, assert themselves in a meaningful way with family offices without impinging on their ability to grow their asset base?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it can be a hard one to answer because the SEC and really any regulator is really not in the business of telling firms how to manage money, how to manage those assets or how to trade or what type of investment strategy to impose. So they don't really want to stifle that innovation themselves, but they want to make sure that the firms are acting within the confines of the regulatory environment that is imposed upon them. And of course, different firms have different compliance regulations that they have to adhere to depending on the nature of their business. And right now, family offices are under the radar and really are only subject to the general anti-fraud statutes, because any firm that's out there, or any individual for that matter, that's out there, trading securities is subject to the general anti-fraud statutes that exist. And that really is the only way that regulators are really looking at these firms at the moment. But if they're pooling assets and creating pooled investment vehicles like hedge funds, even if that money is privately owned and held by these family offices, they are still subject to certain anti-fraud statutes under the Investment Advisors Act even. So they do have ways in to look at these firms, and that's exactly what they're going to be doing right now to ensure that there isn't another Archegos sitting out there somewhere doing the same thing. But they don't want to tell firms, whether they're a family office or any other type of advisory entity, they don't want to be telling them how to manage money. They don't want to stifle their creativity. in their ways in which they create their strategies. So that's really not what their direction they want to go.
Well, they don't want to do that, but I think there's, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there's people in the financial industry that would say they do have that effect because they put limitations on financial activity. Now, obviously, that's kind of the idea. We used to have Ponzi schemes that don't exist anymore, except in rare and spectacular instances, like with Bernie Madoff. But you know, that didn't used to be something that was regulated out of existence until people figured out it was a scam. So when it comes to family offices, we're looking at like 3,000, around 3,000 single family offices in the United States. And that's, again, single family offices, not multifamily offices. So does the SEC, as an example, have the horsepower to take them under their purview as well? And what would the regulation look like in a case with family offices? I don't know if that's even a fair question, Amy, but you've been in that environment. Do you have any sense of that?
Yes, of course, the SEC can take a look at it and decide what type of regulation would be the best fit. And I do think that is something that they're looking into. There's been a few speeches recently by certain SEC staff members, Commissioner Peirce, as well as Chairman Gensler, have come out and said, you know, because of what's happened at Archegos, they are considering certain ways into that part of the industry. And one could be requiring some sort of a registration under the Investment Advisors Act for family offices. In other words, removing that current exemption that exists or changing it in a way to put some of those firms under the registration umbrella. Or they could decide to have a reporting and disclosure requirement on certain types of transactional activity. And of course, I think that would have to do with leverage and swap transactions, since those were the types of transactions that caused the problem with the banks just now. So there are ways in, they're talking about it. I suspect that there will be a rule proposal at some point this year regarding one of those two things, either the reporting and disclosure side or a registration rule.
Well, we know family offices are pushing back hard already. So let's imagine that you were asked to consult with the National Association of Family Offices, which no such organization exists. I don't think I just made that up. But and we're asked, you know, how should we handle this? We've been pushing back hard, but at the same time, it doesn't help our cause to have incidents like this happening. What would you tell them just in terms of how to deal with regulators in a way that doesn't shoot themselves in the foot?
Well, I guess it depends on what their interaction is with the regulator. In other words, if they're on the receiving side of a letter from the SEC looking into their business practices, then they should be very cooperative with the SEC staff, provide them with the information that they ask for, and try to, you know, create a good working relationship with the SEC and put their best foot forward as far as how they present themselves to the commission. Because any kind of a examination or inquiry, you want to be cooperative with the SEC so that they will essentially go away faster. So the less cooperative a firm is with the commission, the harder the commission deals with that firm. And I have seen that time and time again over my 25 years in the business. And of course, also even as an SEC examiner, when I had a firm that I felt was not being cooperative, it would make me keep coming back for more questions. Whereas if a firm was being cooperative and doing its best to answer my questions, then, you know, as soon as I felt like I had what I needed, you know, we would close out the exam.
So this story lands like an asteroid during a Democratic administration versus a Republican administration. And I'll speak in stereotypes right now. There is the stereotype being that the Democrats ask regulators to actually enforce laws. Republican administrations tend to take a softer touch, you know, just let business be business, go easy, let's not stifle things. How big a deal is it that it's happened during a Democratic administration and the Biden administration, a pretty liberal administration, I would say? I mean, do you see things how I just, not exactly like I outlined to Mamie, but would you say that the regulatory agencies are given a little bit more leeway with Democratic administrations and Republican administrations in terms of getting funding and the personnel required to enforce regulations?
Most definitely. Whenever there is a Democratic administration and the SEC is led by a Democratic chairman, then there is a preponderance to have a stronger SEC in the sense that enforcement will be more active, the examination program will be more active, investment management will be more active with rulemaking, as well as the Division of Corporate Finance. So there will be more happening, and the agency will become more active during a Democratic administration than a Republican one. And that has been seen time and time again over the history of politics and the various administrations that have existed. And I can speak to that too from being in a Democratic administration when I was at the SEC. So it will change. I think it will also be very interesting with Chairman Gensler. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One is, yes, he's a Democratic chairman. He is also not an attorney, which is very unusual for the SEC not to be led by an attorney. So he is very much, first and foremost, a business person. You know, he has a banking background. He was at Goldman Sachs. He knows how Wall Street works from the business and operational side. So he's approaching it from a bit of a different perspective than other chairmen in the past. And so I think that will be a really interesting scenario for the SEC to see exactly where the focus does become and how much is he going to change how enforcement cases proceed, or, you know, how examinations are put forth to the industry. What gets focused on from the examination level? Is it going to be certain types of asset managers? Will he go forward and say, okay, we're looking at those managers that are involved in crypto and ESG and some of the, you know, hot topic items? Is he really going to, I guess, put his money where his mouth is, or where the administration's mouth is, as far as some of the items that have been spoken about recently? And how fast can he do that? Is he going to do it? How fast can he do it? And right now he's dealing with two major issues, as we know right now, with the meme stock frenzy. So they're working on that. They're working on the Archegos issue that we're talking about today. And those are two big hot ticket items that need to be addressed in a pretty short time frame in order to satisfy Congress.
Interesting. I think cryptocurrency in particular is going to be really interesting. And as you say, having somebody from the street who's going to be dealing with this will be interesting. It'll be a different perspective. So let me, getting back to the family office thing, just in kind of wrapping things up, Amy, what else would you make mention of? Is there any other element or dimension to this story? There's probably a lot of them, but anything else that you think our listeners should know or should be focused on, or something I may have overlooked that you think is important to the discussion?
Well, something is going to happen. I'm pretty confident about that. There will be something that comes of this, and something as in some sort of regulation will come from this. If it's determined that Archegos was more than just a one-off. So if after looking at not just Archegos, but maybe a few other family offices, which I'm sure the SEC is doing, if they suspect that there is room for potential fraud, misappropriation of assets, wrongdoing in some manner, some systemic risk that could be imposed with these prime brokers that we saw with Archegos, if they feel there is a need to add some sort of regulation, whether it be reporting and disclosure or registration of certain types of family offices, they're going to do that. So I think there will be action that will be taken if they think that there's a need, if there's a true risk to the industry in some way, or to investors, obviously, in some way. And another thing that I thought would be interesting to come of this, and if it comes out, is, was Archegos truly a family office? With $13 billion in assets under management, that's huge. So it makes you wonder if all of those assets were truly just family members of Mr. Huang. And, you know, the large family offices, the ones that are in the billions, that's a good question to ask. And I think it's one that the SEC will be asking when they take a look at those shops to make sure that they can even fall under the exemption. Because if they don't, then there's a problem there with registration already.
So Mr. Huang may have been camouflaging himself. It sounds like you're indicating that it was a place where he was out of view of regulators. Hey, I'm a family office, but really not a family office. It was good camouflage. Is that possibly? And let's say that was the case, then, and they don't find anybody else hiding in plain sight in the family office world. Maybe regulators, well, you do feel pretty confident regulators are going to put some kind of stamp on this whole issue, it sounds like, Amy, but it also sounds like you think Mr. Huang may have just been hiding out there and being capable of carrying out activities that they had basically banned him from doing.
I suspect it only because bad actors are known for being repeat offenders. So it's possible. I don't know for certain, but I would not be surprised if he indeed was managing money outside of his family, which would put him in violation of the, well, he can't violate an exemption, but it would make him fall outside of the exemption. And therefore, his office would have had to have been registered with the SEC. And with him being barred from the industry, that would have been a no-go. So he would have been in violation of his own bar, for example. There could be some interesting citations that come out of the Archegos matter.
Could you see prison time in this case? Is it that serious? And would do regulators have the legal muscle to actually put him behind bars, or would that be fairly far-fetched?
Right. The SEC does not have criminal authority that would be subject to the DOJ. So the SEC only has civil enforcement authority. So they can fine him, they can bar him. But if he conducted any kind of a criminal fraud or negligence, then that would be under the Department of Justice.
Do regulators sometimes just refer the matter to Department of Justice? We think this is a really bad instance here, and this was a criminal behavior, so we'd like you to take a look at it because we think you may want to act on it.
Yes, most definitely they do.
Again, our guest has been Amy Lynch, whose regulatory experience is with the SEC and FINRA. She was an examiner and an investigator for those organizations, and she is founder and president of Frontline Compliance. That's an organization that now would assist the private sector with their regulatory and compliance issues. Amy, thanks again for coming on the program. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for having me. It's been fun, as always.